It's late in the evening on the night of the 2016 U.S. election.
Oh my God, he did it! I can't believe it! I need to call him right now!
Please hold for the president-elect.
Is everybody having a good time?
Oh boy, it sounds like a party over there. Donald, it's me, Vince McMahon. Congratulations, President-elect Donald Trump.
Let me just tell you a couple of things, Vince. We're going to run things, and we're going to run them properly. You're going to get lots of freebies from Donald Trump.
Oh boy, I can't wait. And as a fellow billionaire, I'm happy to give you my suggestions on how to run this great nation. You should start with a 3-hour State of the Union address. Kill them with content. They'll be so exhausted you can say anything and pass any laws. And I'll be happy to lend you our Raw writers for it. Just make sure you throw in sparkle crotch or some bathroom humor.
There's nothing like really good ownership, is there?
Oh, you bet. By the way, I don't know if you made up your mind on the Supreme Court, but what about Judge Vincent Kennedy McMahon? From WE to the highest court. I have great judgment. I hire disabled people and then hit them with their own prosthetic legs.
You know, Vince, I've known you a long time. And honestly, I always thought you had guts.
Grapefruits, Donald, grapefruits. By the way, my wife Linda would be honored to be in any position you need for your cabinet. Speaking of my wife, if God forbid the First Lady were ever to be in a catatonic state, it's perfectly fine and legal to make out with your new girlfriend in front of your wife while she's incapacitated in a wheelchair.
I can do whatever the hell I want.
You got that right, pal.
So Vince, our deal.
Right. Our SmackDown general manager, Daniel Bryan, wanted me to let you know he's a big advocate about the environment, clean energy, and simple living, and would love to work with you.
You know, Vince, no interest whatsoever. No interest.
Of course not. I just wanted to take another pot shot at that B-plus player. Damn tree hugger. All right, Donald, I just wanted to say congrats again, and you're invited next year to Orlando.
And the greatest thing to happen is going to be WrestleMania.
Maybe in the future we'll bring it back to Trump Plaza in Atlantic City. Wait, that was a failure. It closed down.
No.
Hello? Donald? Mr. Trump? Hello? Son of a bitch. Was it something I said?
It's business time, baby.
The Solomonster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
I was very disappointed. Friday, the NES Classic came out, went on Amazon, sold out in 10 seconds. They crashed Amazon. I've never actually seen that before, but I guess whatever limited supply they put up, gone. In 10 seconds. For those who don't know, the NES Classic is a miniaturized version of the original Nintendo Entertainment System from the mid-1980s. Comes pre-installed with 30 different games. Legend of Zelda. You know, I never actually beat The Legend of Zelda. That game, it was like the bane of my existence. And to this day, I've never beaten the original Zelda. So, it's only $60 too. It's a hell of a steal, I think. Unless you have the original NES, you could still hook it up. I've long gotten rid of mine. So I am now searching high and low for this thing. I'm still hopeful to find it at some point. Hey, if anybody listening has a spare NES Classic, shoot me an email. But anyway, this is episode 469 of the Solomonster Sounds Off. Here for Sunday, November 13, 2016. I am the Solomonster, much to get to this week. This has been a very interesting week, to say the least. And if you would like to take advantage, one thing that doesn't change, you could take advantage of our Audible offer. We've only got about a month and a half left in the year. It is not too late to take advantage. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Get yourself a free audio book on me. You can try out the service for 30 days. They got over 180,000 book titles and audiobook form to choose from. A lot of wrestling books, one of which is The Death of WCW. A lot of you are taking advantage of that. A lot of you, and I get the same feedback from everybody. It's one of the funniest books and one of the most depressing books they've ever heard. Read, heard, whatever. And I agree. I agree. It will make you cry in more ways than one. And so if you'd like to get yourself a free copy of The Death of WCW, narrated by the author himself, you can take advantage using our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Even if you cancel your trial in those 30 days not to get billed, you still get to keep your free book. So jump on that while you still can. Don't forget, we have shirts up on our store, ProWrestlingTees.com. You could also make a PayPal donation on TheSolidMonster.com, right-hand side of the page. You'll see the button. I want to say thank you to all of our PayPal VIPs who made a donation this week. Remember, $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on the show. $30 or more will get you a quick shout-out as well for your own podcast, YouTube show, business, what have you. So I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, The Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra, Keith the Conqueror Krajnik, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Mass Grave, Micah Harshaw, Tony the Tiger Boylan, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, David Funnyman Physicus, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, Jam Master Jamie Wood, The Stone Mountain Assassin Adrian Mitchum II, American Misery, Jordan Di Paola, the Montreal Mauler, Patrick Pacheco, the Singapore Slayer, Hazik Mohammed, and last but not least, I want to give another shout out to the Black Buck, good friend of the show, Matt Harrigan, who is still running his Super Kick the Holidays fundraiser, looking to raise a lot more money between now and, I believe, December 3rd to try to put clothing on the homeless and those who need it. Here in New York and beyond, they buy independent wrestling gear, which supports the independent wrestlers, and in turn, they donate that clothing. It's a great cause. Please check them out at superkickfoundation.org. So thank you, as always, for your kind generosity. I also want to wish a happy birthday to Anthony Missionary Thomas from Wrestling Soup. Happy birthday, Mish. I will try to spend not too much time on this, but it is the biggest story of the week. It is the biggest story of the year, really. I have not said anything or tweeted anything since Tuesday night. I just had to get off social media, but gave myself a little social media blackout for a few days. Actually felt pretty good. Dick Johnson tweeted me yesterday, shout out to him. He said, did Solomonster kill himself when he woke up Wednesday morning and found out the guy who once shaved Vince McMahon's head is the next president? Well, if I wanted to, I could go to Colorado now. Assisted suicide, approved in the state of Colorado on election day last Tuesday. But yes, the election is over. Donald Trump is now president-elect of the United States. With that, he becomes the first member of the WWE Hall of Fame to be elected president. Already there's talk, I see, that Linda McMahon may end up with a position in a Trump administration. The same Linda McMahon who spent $100 million to lose two Senate races. Trump had wanted to go to Madison Square Garden last night for the UFC 205 show. It was their first show. UFC's one of their biggest shows of all time, maybe their biggest. From what I had read, I think they did their biggest gate of all time, which is nuts. They did over $17 million, you know, for a gate at MSG, which I don't even think fits a full 20,000 people. And that gate is slightly higher than what WWE did for WrestleMania this year in Dallas with what they claimed was 100,000 people. So I can only imagine the markup on tickets. You know, people ask me, hey, why you didn't go to MSG for the UFC show? Yeah, because I don't want to go bankrupt. I was like, that's going to be a hot ticket. I'm staying far away from that. So they had a very, very big night. They might have even set their pay-per-view record last night. I saw part of the show. My brother had ordered it, and you know, I went over there. We were watching that, and you know, Conor McGregor, what can I say? You know, the guy gets it. I know he pisses off a lot of wrestling fans, but the guy knows what he's doing. That's why he's probably the biggest box office attraction in the world right now. And good for him. He's a double title holder now. But anyway, the point is, I'm getting off topic here. Trump wanted to go. He's a big UFC fan. Him and Dana White are tight. And I know he had wanted to go to the show. And the Secret Service talked him out of it and said, no, it's a security concern. You shouldn't go. So I take it he didn't go. There's a lot of things that he was used to doing that he ain't going to be able to do anymore. So he's going to have to get used to that. As far as this election is concerned, you know, I wasn't predicting a landslide, but on the last show I did predict, my prediction was it was going to end up 307-229 in the electoral college vote in favor of Clinton, and it ended up almost flipped exactly the other way around. I wasn't too far off in terms of the votes. I just got the person wrong. Now, she is beating him in the popular vote, not that it matters. They're not done counting yet. They got a lot of mail-in ballots, but it, you know, there's a lot left, apparently millions of ballots, I guess, in California left to be counted. So, chances are she's going to end up with probably close to something like 2 million more votes, than him. And I found this fascinating. I didn't realize this, but if that holds, that would mean that the Republican Party, again, in this country of the two-party system, you have Republicans, you have Democrats. The Republican Party will have lost the popular vote in 6 of the last 7 presidential elections. That is unbelievable. But it's like I said a month ago. I said, you know, you could win the popular vote, but still lose the election. It's all about the Electoral College. And for better or worse, that's the system that we have. You know, each state has a certain designated number of electors. And those electors are really the people who vote for president and vice president. I mean, it's their vote, ultimately, that seals the deal. I mean, they don't even meet until the middle of next month. And funny enough, Trump himself posted a tweet after Obama won re-election 4 years ago, calling the Electoral College a disaster for democracy. And I guess if he really believes that, he'll push to have it abolished over the next 4 years. I wouldn't hold my breath on that. But for now, those are the rules. And if you don't like it, then we need to elect people who have the guts to change the system. Until that happens, nothing will ever change. Trump was able to convince enough people that he is that person. He is an agent of change. He's an outsider who's going to put all the crooked politicians in their place, and he's going to put more money in our pockets. That's what he says. We'll see. We'll see. He's driving the car now. And if we root for him to drive it into oncoming traffic, we all die with him. I don't want that. But I do worry. And I'm not going to lie. I worry. You know, as someone who got hit by my own health issues at the beginning of the year, as you well know, I worry when I hear things about changing the healthcare system. You know, my ears perk up, like my antenna. They perk up. You know, whenever they talk about interest rates, I still have student loans that I'm paying off. I'm sure some of you do too. I hear that, my ears perk up. You know, and the healthcare stuff, look, it's far from a perfect system. Believe me, the one thing you learn real quick when you get sick is how quickly those medical bills start to pile up, even for just basic tests. You start getting bills in the mail. It's like, where's this coming from? It's something else. And, you know, my mother dealing with her own health issues. Healthcare is one of many issues that are important to me. Everybody has their own issues that are important to them. That's definitely at or near the top of the list for me. And, you know, I see Trump already is talking about, well, maybe we won't throw everything away and we'll keep some provisions and not others and protect people with pre-existing conditions and whatnot. And that's all well and good. Well, you know, saying things and doing things are two different things, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens come January. I mean, that's really all there is, to say. This was a pick your poison election. I can understand people being tired of the same old faces. I get that. You know, look, I review 5 hours of WWE television every week. 6 if you count NXT. You don't have to tell me that. But this election, and I'm talking more about the process, was a national disgrace. They all are now. The way they start almost 2 years in advance. They start running, I mean, so far in advance. And I mean, Trump wasn't serving in office, but like a lot of them are, but a lot of them are in office, have a job to do, and they start running a year and a half, 2 years before. There is no reason for an election to go on for that long. 3 months, to me, is a perfectly acceptable length of time for people to get to know who these candidates are and then hold an election. You know, in other parts of the world, it's even less than that. Some places have laws that limit the length of a campaign. Maybe we ought to start looking into that. To me, 3 months, 3 debates, that's what makes sense. But the length of these campaigns is out of control. I mean, it feels like this election was just going on and on and on forever. And the money, the money that's spent on them is even worse. The fact that you have to raise millions, if not billions of dollars, just to even have a realistic shot at becoming president. I mean, it's no wonder that we're limited to the bozos that we have. I mean, you look at all these approval ratings for people in Congress and stuff, like 18%, 20%. You know, it's no wonder. I just hope he realizes the awesome responsibility that he's been given here. 60 million people voted for him. Whether they actually like him and they believe he's going to do what he says, or they just voted for him out of protest because they didn't like her, they still voted for him. But there's another 60 million plus who did not vote for him. And a lot of those people are really nervous right now. And they have every right to be. But he's got a real chance to help people here, and I hope he does. That's all I can hope for. Meanwhile, Facebook got a little ahead of itself this week. On Friday, there was a glitch. I don't know if some of you guys got hit by this. There was a glitch where a lot of users had a memorial banner on their page showing that they were dead. Trump hasn't even been sworn in yet. I wasn't among the dead, though. I don't know whether to feel thankful or left out, but I was not among the dead. One more election note. Rhino lost his race in Michigan. He was running as a Republican for a congressional seat. He ended up with 38% of the vote to his opponent's 62%, so he got gored. Lucky for him, he has another job to fall back on. Speaking of losing jobs and having other jobs to fall back on, that brings me to Joey Styles. Joey Styles was fired from Evolve last night after their Evolve 72 show, which I believe was their first live event on the Flow Slam service. That's the new wrestling service from Flow Sports I talked about a few weeks ago. Joey's been back doing commentary on the indies since he got fired from WWE this summer. He's also been something of an authority figure in Evolve. He was calling the show with Lenny Leonard. The main event was about to start between Timothy Thatcher, who I believe suffered a concussion in the match, and Drew Gulak, who has been offered a contract by WWE, him and Tony Nese both, so it looks like they'll be coming in on a more full-time basis. So, as the match was about to begin, Styles said that Gabe Sapolsky had told him not to make any political jokes on the show. So, what does he do? He throws it to Joanna Rose, the female ring announcer, and he says, "Joanna, you look great tonight, and if our next president were here tonight, he'd want to grab you by the..." And then he stopped short of saying pussy, poking fun at what Donald Trump said on that Access Hollywood tape from 2005 when he said that he grabs women by their privates and gets away with it because he's a celebrity. Yeah. Gabe immediately took to Twitter to apologize. He said he was furious. And he posted that tweet, and at first it almost seemed like an angle. I didn't know what was going on. I wasn't watching the show. But he followed it up with some other tweets that showed that it was not an angle. After the show ended, he tweeted that we have parted ways with Joey Styles, and that will be my final comment on the matter. Flow Slam, on their official account, said, "We do not support or condone Joey Styles' remarks tonight in any manner, and we support this decision 100%. Now, I know there are going to be people who hear about this, and they think, oh, this is politically correct BS, you know, it was a joke, etc., etc. But I support Gabe 100% on this. First of all, Joey admitted on the air that his boss told him before the show, don't make any political jokes. I mean, if my boss explicitly told me not to do something and I did it anyway, I'd be fired too. And deservedly so. The difference between this and what WWE fired him for is that in that video on WWE.com that got him fired, Joey, he had a comment in there about, well, they're probably going to fire me for talking about whatever it is that he talked about. I don't think anybody actually told Joey beforehand, hey, don't talk about Roman Reigns. Don't talk about the Universal title name. Don't talk about this. Don't talk about that. Yeah, he was kind of joking, but I got the sense nobody actually said anything to him beforehand, and he made the comments that he made. And I actually thought WWE overreacted, and I was kind of sticking up for Joey at the time. But that's very different from this. Here, he was told not to do something, and he did it anyway. Now, second of all, Gabe had no choice. I mean, put yourself in this guy's shoes. This guy's making a joke like that, and this is the company's very first broadcast on Flow Slam. They just entered into this deal with Flow Slam that's going to host all of their events and all of their archives. It's a big deal. I think it's like a 5-year deal. Okay, that puts him in a tough position if he doesn't do anything. And he still, don't forget, has the relationship with WWE to think about. You know, Joey made a stupid mistake and he paid the price for it. Not to mention, I didn't see the show, but I was reading through all the comments about Joey's commentary in some live threads and on Twitter, and apparently he was horrendous. Tweet after tweet about how he was just putting himself over the whole time and he just wasn't very good. Jeremy Borash from TNA went on Twitter right around the same time. He never named Joey by name, although it was pretty obvious who he was talking about. He just tweets, "I've always thought wrestling announcers generally have overinflated egos. You're not the star and you don't bump. Get over yourself." It's pretty obvious who he was referring to there. Apparently, you know, backstage he was very apologetic to everyone, and he even apologized to the female ring announcer who said she wasn't offended by it, but he was going around, he's very sorry for what happened, he refused his pay for the show. He messed up. He messed up, and Gabe did what he had to do. I don't fault him at all for it. I wanted to talk just briefly about the Chris Jericho Sin Cara fight from last weekend. I think it happened last Sunday, so I just barely missed it. I didn't have a chance to talk about it on the podcast. Apparently, they were traveling from England to Scotland last Sunday. Sin Cara was on the tour bus. He was making weird noises, and everybody was just annoyed and wanted him to stop. They asked him to stop. He didn't. So Jericho then came over. He said something a little bit more forceful. And in response, Sin Cara allegedly told him to fuck off. And nothing ever good comes from that. Words were exchanged. Sin Cara threw a wild punch that missed. The other wrestlers got involved to break it up. I guess while doing so, Jericho bit Sin Cara on the finger. And Sin Cara got kicked off the bus. I'd like to think that they were like on the side of the road somewhere and they just left him stranded. And he had to hitchhike his way to the hotel. All while wearing his mask. This is not the first time Sin Cara's been involved in a fight. Not the first time Jericho's gotten into someone's face either. He pulled that on Brock Lesnar backstage at SummerSlam and somehow lived to tell about it. But Sin Cara's been in fights with Sheamus and Simon Gotch in the past, and I believe he has gotten the best of both of them. So probably not somebody you want to mess with. He still wrestled on the tour and wrestled on Raw the next night. His team even won their match. But they are supposedly sending him to anger management classes. So maybe they can bring back Dr. Shelby and turn it into a storyline. You know, look, I don't think the guy is worth all of the trouble. I mean, it's Sin Cara. You know what I mean? Like, by the second incident, it's about time to give him the boot, I would say. I don't know that he's worth all this trouble, but evidently they don't agree because they're keeping him around. So I guess you can add Sin Cara to the list of Jericho. Raw this past Monday was live. Well, actually not live. I guess live on tape. From Glasgow, Scotland, Raw Twitter poll, 1,760 votes, 34% thumbs up, 66% thumbs down. This is becoming a very bad pattern here. Seth Rollins will indeed join the rest of Team Raw at Survivor Series as its fifth member. Shocking, I know. Rollins made it clear that Stephanie promised him certain things in order to get him to agree to be on Team Raw. And given all the sexual tension we've seen on TV between the two of them, I have to assume there were promises of sexual favors made. But it's probably something lame, like a Universal title match. Stephanie then, 2 weeks before Survivor Series, booked a fatal five-way match with all five members of Team Raw, risking potential injury to one or more members of her team. That makes sense. You know, it's like, I need you guys to work together. The very existence of Raw depends on you. Now go fight each other. Like, okay. Rollins, by the way, also used that sparkle crotch line on Jericho again in here somewhere. And I saw an item in this week's Observer newsletter that Vince McMahon loved the term sparkle crotch when he heard Rollins use it the first time. Apparently he was laughing like a maniac every time Rollins would say it, which is why he had him say it over and over and over again. And why am I not surprised? I am not surprised in the least hearing about that. Noam Dar got a great home country reaction making his Raw debut. He came off like a real star here. It was him and Brian Kendrick, I guess. They were a team against Rich Swann and Mr. Fuck-Off himself, Sin Cara. Dar and Kendrick lost when Swann pinned Kendrick for the second time in 3 weeks, I think. They're grooming Rich Swann for a shot at Kendrick's Cruiserweight title, even though Kendrick is defending the title against Kalisto at Survivor Series with the stipulation that if he loses, the title and the entire Cruiserweight division goes to SmackDown. I suspect that's not happening, even though it should. I am all in favor of the Cruiserweights going to SmackDown. If you're asking me what do I want to see happen, that's what I'd love to see. I think the Cruiserweight division should have been on SmackDown from day one. I know they have the extra hour of Raw, and so they wanted to have it on Raw, but, you know, to me, it's been more in line with what you would expect to see on SmackDown and with Mauro on commentary. Like, that would have made more sense. I thought it would pump some more life into Raw. You know, once they said, okay, the Cruiserweights are coming to Raw, I'm like, well, that's kind of weird, but okay, great. This is going to be exciting now. The show, it'll be a different energy, and we'll get some new faces. This will be good. And I thought it would pump new life into the show, and honestly, it really hasn't so far. It really hasn't, but so you know what? Move him to SmackDown. Kalisto should have been in that division anyway. It never made any sense to me why he got drafted to SmackDown if the Cruiserweights were coming to Raw. And then Neville disappeared for about 5 months. And now he's back. He's not doing any of the Cruiserweight stuff, I guess, because they want to get the new guys over. It doesn't mean you can't have Neville on TV wrestling in Cruiserweight matches. I mean, they're doing nothing with him. So I say let him win the title at Survivor Series, move all these guys to SmackDown, trade Neville over there too while you're at it, and make him one of the featured stars in that division. They're already going to start taping that 205 live show on Tuesdays at the SmackDown tapings. They're going to have all these guys there anyway. It's the right move to make. And Mauro Ranallo is better at calling those matches than Michael Cole is. Michael Cole is not, he's not dreadful like he used to be. You know, when it was all about him doing the heel thing. But, you know, Mauro Ranallo is a better announcer than Michael Cole is when it comes to, I think, calling matches like this and calling moves and talking about their backgrounds. He's a lot more like JR in that respect than Michael Cole is. Michael Cole is good, I guess, at what he does. But, you know, I thought Mauro and Daniel Bryan were a great fit for the Cruiserweight Classic, and I enjoyed their commentary. And I just think all around it would be the move to make. So I hope they do it. Now, after the match, Kendrick blamed Noam Dar for the loss. He punched him. Dar fought back, knocked him out of the ring, so he got to stand tall, at least, in front of his friends and family. By the way, Noam Dar's favorite wrestler of all time is Eddie Guerrero. And today just so happens to be 11 years since Eddie passed away. I miss that guy a lot. I really do. Eddie was a special talent. He could wrestle. Personality-wise, though, I mean, he was a guy, he could be absolutely hated or absolutely beloved, right? That takes talent. Not everybody can pull that off. It's not easy for a guy that people love to get himself booed. And that last year, some of the stuff he did with Rey Mysterio, I mean, he was able to pull that off. And I think wrestling is worse off for not having him around. And the measure... It's funny, you know, they talk about the one's legacy and the measure of their influence and that kind of stuff. You know what the measure of their legacy is? It's in the number of people who point to that person as an influence on their career, who point to them as their favorite wrestler. Like Noam Dar, like Sasha Banks. You know, people make fun of her a lot because she's always talking about Eddie. You know, it's hard not to, it's not hard to see why. And I'm sure there's a lot of other guys on that roster, and there's a lot of guys in the Performance Center. And on the indies, a lot of people would have Eddie Guerrero on their list. That's the legacy that he leaves behind. And it's so cool to see, you know, even still to this day, 11 years later, people chanting Eddie whenever they do the Three Amigos or when someone pulls the old switcheroo with the steel chair, they immediately think of Eddie Guerrero and they cheer. And I think that's really cool. There was a comedy segment. This was not cool. There was a comedy segment in the ring with all of the tag teams involved in the Raw versus SmackDown match at Survivor Series. The New Day, dressed like something out of the movie Braveheart since they were in Scotland. Cass and Enzo, Sheamus and Cesaro, Gallows and Anderson, and the Golden Truth, who are not even in the match anymore since R-Truth gave up their spot to the Shining Stars in exchange for a timeshare in Puerto Rico. Which, by the way, I think was probably the move to make. Right? I mean, be in a match where you're probably going to get eliminated within 5 minutes or, take a vacation to Puerto Rico. I'd probably go with Puerto Rico myself. But this segment was so long, it may still be going on as I speak. I'm not sure it's over. I didn't watch Raw until the next day, so I'm catching up on it on Tuesday. And in the middle of this segment, I stopped. It was going on for so long, I stopped. I paused it. I went on Twitter, and I asked you guys. I said, does this segment ever end? It would go on and on and on. And I skipped through the end of it because I just couldn't take it anymore. I just couldn't stand it. All of this led to a match between Gallows and Anderson in the New Day that I think Gallows and Anderson won. I don't know. I skipped through it because who could possibly care at this point? You know, forget this. Let's talk about the best thing on the entire show. Brock Lesnar. And he wasn't even there. Can we talk about how great that video package was promoting his match with Goldberg at Survivor Series? That was awesome. Talked about their match at WrestleMania 20. He said he didn't give two shits about wrestling at the time because he knew he was leaving. He was going to go try out for the NFL. He begged Goldberg's wife and his 10-year-old son not to watch the pay-per-view, stay at home, and hopefully your husband returns. And then he pauses and he says, hopefully. Magnificent. I love this. And they had a separate video for Goldberg, which was also very good, but this was just great. It was great because I believed every word that he said. I believed every word that you could have Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, anyone else on the roster, you know, cut that same promo. And it would be like, oh, okay, yeah, okay, sure, yeah, whatever. When Brock says it, you believe it. I'd say there's a pretty damn good chance Goldberg really does get hurt in that match. Okay, I mean, look, if The Rock goes away for 8 years, comes back and tears multiple muscles in matches with John Cena, and you could talk about, you know, how something like that happens and what he may or may not have been doing. What do you think the chances are that Goldberg, who's a lot older than The Rock was when he came back, right? Rock was closer to 40, Goldberg's closer to 50, hasn't stepped in the ring in like 12 years, and his very first opponent back, this ain't no warm-up match, his first opponent back is Brock Lesnar. What do you think the chances are that he's going to leave that ring unscathed? I fear for the man's safety. But this was an example of when WWE really wants to, they can really pump out some great stuff. I mean, I had a lot of people who were asking me, like, on Facebook what I thought about what Colin Cowherd said. And I'm no fan of Colin Cowherd. I think he's an asshole. And, you know, generally, he's just very antagonistic to wrestling fans. He's always calling them booger eaters and just generally showing them no respect, and I really don't have any respect for him. But I get that's his shtick, and that's what he does to keep himself relevant. I don't care for him. But they linked to a segment on his show, I guess. He must be a big UFC fan. He's a big Conor McGregor mark. And he was talking about the UFC show at Madison Square Garden coming up this weekend. And he was making a comparison from boxing to MMA to wrestling, and how boxing is dead. MMA has replaced it. Wrestling is dead. MMA has replaced it. And he was going through some of the things that have killed off boxing and killed off wrestling. And, you know, he made some valid points. I'll give him that. He was talking about, you know, look at the bringing back Goldberg, and they're bringing back this guy and that guy and guys from, you know, the Attitude Era, and they can't match the excitement and the realism of UFC. And I agree with actually much of that. I think that there is no excuse for wrestling to be in the doldrums that it's in right now. I mean, look, there's a lot of great stuff going on in wrestling. I don't want to paint this picture like it's all doom and gloom. I mean, there's a lot of great wrestling out there, and there's a lot of good stuff, but maybe it's just overexposure. Maybe there's just too much of it. Maybe it's that you watch 3 hours every Monday night, and that really very negatively colors your view of how wrestling is, because you're sitting there watching a boring show, and you're thinking, man, this is terrible. How did we get to this point? But I don't want that to, you know, ruin some of the good stuff we see on SmackDown and NXT and stuff like that. But, the fact is, wrestling is not hot. Wrestling is not hot the way it used to be. I know they're making money and stuff, but you either feel it or you don't. And I think you would be hard pressed to find anybody who watches wrestling week to week, especially if you watch WWE, who would say, man, wrestling is super hot, man. It's so exciting and it's so hot. No, it's not. And he's right about that. You know, I mean, that excitement that used to be there, that must-see TV feel to the shows, that's gone. That is gone. It may never come back. And, you know, they have all these pay-per-views and all these main events that nobody really cares about, and it's the same shit over and over again. And so his point is, you've got somebody like a McGregor in UFC who's this big draw, who knows... I said it earlier when I was talking about, you know, what happened last night. I mean, I saw his fight and I saw him afterwards, and the guy gets it. He knows exactly what he's doing. He gets it. That's why he makes as much money and he's as successful as he is, because he understands that. And I think he'd fit in very well in wrestling. But in a way, I almost wouldn't want WWE to get their hands on him, because I don't think they would know what to do with him. I mean, they have given me zero indication that they would even know what to do with a guy like that. I mean, look at their baby faces on this show. Who is there to even get behind? Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar ain't no baby face. But how do you watch that video package and watch this guy and how he carries himself and not root for him? I know people think his matches now are boring. It's just suplex after suplex. I agree. I mean, it's getting freaking old. I'm not going to debate you on that, but there's a certain aura that this guy has that nobody else has on that roster. And I'm watching this video package on Monday night, which, you know, he didn't even say much. He's just kind of sitting there, Heyman staring at him. It's not like the guy was moving mountains, but when that thing was over, I was hyped. You know, I couldn't wait to see Goldberg and Lesnar at Survivor Series. And that is the match I'm looking forward to the most. I mean, it really is. You know, I mean, they're making this card. They're trying to make this card important with all the stipulations and stuff. But that is the match that I'm looking forward to the most. They got me completely hyped up with those two video packages on Monday night because they made it feel like a real fight. They tapped into a certain realism that absolutely nothing else on this show has. There is nothing else on Raw that feels real. Nothing. Zip. Zilch. Nada. It feels like a TV show, which it is. But you've got to be able to make the people feel like, you know, hey, these two people hate each other, or hey, I want to see these guys beat the crap out of each other. And they just don't do a good enough job of doing that. And that's one of the reasons why wrestling is down from where it used to be. And if you're a UFC fan, if you like MMA and wrestling, and you're looking at the two objectively side by side, and you're looking at a guy like Conor McGregor going into this fight last night, and you're looking at, you know, him cutting those promos and getting everybody all hyped up for the fight, and you compare it to what they're doing now with Stephanie McMahon on TV yelling at all the baby faces, and, you know, you guys gotta, you're representing Team Raw, and you better do a good job or you're all gonna be fired, and slapping people left and right, and Mick Foley out there hooting and hollering at people for God knows what reason. And, you know, you're just like, I don't know. It's almost like sometimes I look at some of that stuff and I'm like, why do I even watch this? You know, it's like, where is the excitement? Where did it go? Where did the guys like Austin and Rock back in the day, these guys would walk around like they were a couple of badasses and you bought into it. Somebody sent me a clip. They emailed me a clip. I'm going to probably put it up on Twitter when I'm done here. I had completely forgotten about this. They sent me a note about the top 9 promo countdown that I just wrapped up and how much they loved it. And they said, you might want to take a look at this promo as well. And it was a segment, I think, from the Go Home Raw. I think it was the week before SummerSlam in 98 at the Garden. I think that was the Highway to Hell show. And they have Steve Austin riding out in a hearse with AC/DC playing in the background. He pulls a casket out from the back of the hearse. He opens the casket, which I guess had beer on ice. He pulls out a beer, he stands on the top of the hearse, he's drinking beer, and you've got Highway to Hell playing in the background, and the place is going nuts. And I'm watching this, and I got goosebumps, and I'm thinking, how the hell did we go from that to this? Like, what the hell happened? I was just blown away. It just was, it was so cool, right? That's what wrestling is missing. We need people, we need stuff. You know, we just need things to be cool. And I think you can make that work, I think, with some of the people they have. They got a lot of really talented guys. I like a lot of those guys. But again, what they're doing, what they have them doing, and the verbiage and all the scripted bullshit and everything. I just talked about that comedy segment with all the tag teams on Monday that would never end. You know, back in the day, it was like you didn't want those segments to end. Now you can't wait for them to end. So you know what? I'll give Colin Cowherd some credit because I think he makes a very good point. But what this shows is that WWE has the capacity to tap into that. And to do things like this more often. It doesn't always have to involve Brock. I mean, generally it tends to. But I'm watching this video and I'm like, this feels like a fight. You know, and maybe that shit comes down to the difference maybe between sports and sports entertainment and what sells more. And I know WWE is doing record revenues and profits and all that stuff. So they're making money because they've got so many different ways now to make money. But when it comes to their TV week to week, the ratings keep going down. People, I mean, I'm doing these polls every single week and people are voting 30% thumbs up, 40% thumbs up, 60% thumbs down, 70% thumbs down. And you ask yourself, why? There's got to be a reason why. It can't be this hard to make these shows more interesting and more exciting, whether they're 2 hours, 3 hours. I mean, it is what it is. It ain't going to change anytime soon. So what do you do? Is it a problem of Vince? Is it a problem of the writers? Is it a problem of the talent? Is it a combination of all three? But I watch this and I'm like, I'm amped up for this. I'm amped up to see 50-year-old Bill Goldberg against Brock Lesnar, a guy who shows up 4 times a year in the main event of Survivor Series. Meanwhile, I see all these other guys week after week after week after week on TV and I could give two shits. I don't care. Who cares? Who cares if Team SmackDown beats Team Raw? Who cares if Team Raw beats Team SmackDown? Make me care. Give me a reason to care. Give me a reason to want to see these guys beat the hell out of each other. Create some personal issues. Triple H comes at him, pedigrees Seth Rollins on Raw, which was a hell of an angle and a hell of a swerve, and it was that was kind of exciting, right? That came out of nowhere. And then they never followed up on it. I mean, they've mentioned it here and there, Triple H. We haven't seen him. And it's been, what, 2 months now? So what are they doing? They're waiting. They're going to drag this out until WrestleMania. In the meantime, they've done nothing to keep our interest level up about this angle. One day Triple H will just show up again and they'll pick up where they left off. You know, I'm sorry, but that's shitty storytelling. That is lazy, shitty storytelling. We have heard nothing from this guy in the meantime. We're just left hanging because we gotta get to WrestleMania. We've gotta get to that big WrestleMania match between Triple H and Seth Rollins. And I guarantee you when that match rolls around, I probably won't care about that either. You know, it's like, it's almost like they're stalling for time. You know, you don't want to waste people's time. You want to give them a reason to stay engaged and stay interested and keep watching. And they just don't do a good job of that. They just don't do a good enough job of that. And I think that was the point that I think he was making. Again, he doesn't make a lot of points that I agree with. But he's right about that. And boxing is, I mean, look, you'll get a Floyd Mayweather fight every now and then that does 2 million buys. And I think he's retired now, so what's boxing going to do? I don't know. I'm not a big boxing expert. I don't know if there's any big draw on the horizon who's going to replace him. So, yeah, I think it's safe to say that MMA has kind of bumped boxing over. But the thing with MMA and pro wrestling is this. MMA, you have no control over what happens. Conor McGregor can have a big fight, and the day before, he could go down with an injury. He suffers a sparring injury, he gets cut open, and now the fight is off. And now you're screwed, because your big pay-per-view main event just went bye-bye. Or you could have a pay-per-view with a great lineup on paper, and it turns out to be a dud. You got guys just laying on top of each other, they're afraid to punch each other, it's a boring fight, or the fight ends quickly, and the show is just shit. It's just total garbage. With wrestling, you control your destiny. You book the show the way you want to book the show. You know, now guys get hurt, true, that can happen in wrestling too, but you have control over the entire thing. It's whatever story you want to tell. The story can be as exciting or as boring as you want it to be. And that's the thing about wrestling. More often than not, they miss the mark, you know, in WWE, but they control their own destiny in a way that MMA can't. So why is it so hard for them to do that? I don't get it. I just don't understand. And it doesn't have to be that way. I saw some people were upset over what happened in the women's segment on this show. Michael Cole was in the ring to introduce the members of the Raw women's team at Survivor Series, and the crowd hijacked the segment. They kept singing for Bayley. Charlotte had to shout over them. I didn't have a problem with it at all. You know, and if you had a problem with that segment but thought it was cute when the fans in Seattle did the same thing for Daniel Bryan, when Triple H was trying to speak, that was the Raw before they unified the titles between Cena and Orton. Okay, if you were okay with that, but not with this, then you're a hypocrite. I had no problem with that, and I had no problem with this either. The fans love Bayley. They're out there having fun. I wish the crowds in this country were as lively as these people were. By the way, it's Charlotte, Nia Jax, Bayley, Alicia Fox, and Sasha Banks representing Team Raw against Nikki Bella, Becky Lynch, Carmella, Alexa Bliss, and Naomi. Those are the teams. Sami Zayn pinned Rusev with the Huluva kick to earn the chance to wrestle Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental title at Survivor Series. I said last week, Zayn made total sense for that spot. I'm glad he got a spot on the show. Now I suspect Miz gets involved in the finish because I don't see the IC title coming to Raw, nor should it. Kevin Owens won the Fatal 5-Way that Stephanie signed over Chris Jericho, Braun Strowman, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns. They had Strowman look like a monster here because he is one. I like Braun. There's something about the guy. Like, even the little times he's talked here and there, you know, his presence in the ring, you know, he's getting better. I saw that that video of that kip-up he did in the match with Big Show on the house show somewhere. I actually think Big Show is probably the perfect person for him to work for. As long as they just keep it on the house shows, I don't want to ever see that on TV. I just have no interest in seeing that on television. But, you know, Big Show, look, that's why they keep guys like Big Show around. You know, we haven't even seen Big Show on TV in months. And Big Show said before, you know, they keep me around to work with the younger guys, the newer guys, and, you know, get them ready. I have no problem with that. Just as long as I don't have to suffer through it on TV, I'm cool with that. But I do think that Strowman's got something. I do that. Hey, look, when I picked my Survivor Series team, which turned out to be, I think, the exact team they went with, but I picked mine like 3 or 4 weeks earlier, I put Braun on the team. And the reason was, I said, you probably want to have an enforcer. Braun is that big, strong guy that if I was putting a team together, right, if I controlled Raw and Noah Mark controlled SmackDown, and I had a guy like Braun Strowman on my roster who's unbeaten and he's throwing guys around like ragdolls and beating him 3-on-1 every week, why the hell would I not want a guy like that on my team? That's why I put him on there. That's why I put him on my team in the first place. So they're building him up as a monster. The finish here was Rollins giving Jericho a pedigree. Roman gave Owens a Superman punch. Owens fell on top of Jericho and he got the pin. And he played it up after like he had no idea what happened, but he was damn sure happy to get the win, even though he pinned his best friend. And that was the show. Some good wrestling, a pair of excellent video packages to build up Lesnar Goldberg, and just still way too much filler. Way too much filler and just boring stuff on this show. And the problem, I mean, I just went through a whole bunch of problems, but one of the problems is the length of the show. I mean, it's the same thing, and I'm going to keep saying it. But instead of me saying it and sounding like a broken record, why don't I let Kane do the talking for me? This is from an interview that he did on their overseas tour recently. He did it with Top Rope Press. So I want to give them a shout out here. You can check out the full video. It's like a 5 or 6 minute video interview in a hotel room somewhere with Kane. It might have been in the UK. So you can find the full video on their YouTube channel. Here is what Kane thinks of the 3-hour format.
I like the 2-hour format much better than I do the 3-hour format. I think it's incredibly hard to produce that sort of content every week. So I really believe that Raw is a bit of a disadvantage being on a 3-hour show as opposed to SmackDown.
A bit of a disadvantage. I think he's being kind when he says that. Even Kane knows 3 hours is just too damn long. And, you know, there was an article in the New York Times this week on the NFL ratings decline, because this has become a big problem for the NFL. A real big problem. And the league is looking at different things that they can do to try to stop the bleeding. One of the things they acknowledge is that the games are too long. And they said that the average length of an NFL game is longer now than it was in 2008. I think the average length now of a game, they said, is 3 hours and 8 minutes. And they're trying to find ways to pick up the pace of the games and reduce the length, in part because they feel too many commercials, coupled with the game being 3 hours, may be chasing people away. Sound familiar? 3 hours? Too many commercials? See, this isn't just a WWE problem. Except it's a problem of their own making, because as I said before, they can control what happens during those 3 hours in a way that the NFL, just like the UFC, cannot. You know, if the NFL has a blowout game or a game where a flag is being thrown every 30 seconds, it's out of their control. It's one of the things I can't stand about the NBA. You hear a whistle every 10 seconds. If WWE just scripted a better show, the way they did the night after Battleground, that was the very first night after the brand split started, 3 hours might not be as much of an issue. But you take a boring show and you stretch it out to 3 hours, who the hell wants to sit and watch that? And now let's go to our new four-man SmackDown announce booth. So from 3 hours of Raw to finding out that Survivor Series is going to be 6 hours long next Sunday, 4 hours plus a two-hour pre-show starting at 5 p.m. This week, they expanded the SmackDown announce team from 3 announcers to 4 announcers. Now it's Mauro Ranallo, JBL, David Otunga, and Tom Phillips from NXT. On SmackDown Tuesday, they barely even had room for the new guy. They're going to have to, literally, they're going to have to build a bigger table to fit all of them in, to accommodate all 4 announcers. During the show, he referred to himself, Phillips did, as the host of SmackDown, and they were kind of having him do these on-camera live shots whenever they would come back from commercial or a match would end, you know, while the other 3 announcers just kind of sat there silently in a very awkward way. I felt bad for Mauro Ranallo. It's not like he's incapable of doing that himself. I thought that he was doing just fine before. But nope, we got to jam as many guys in there as we possibly can. And I like Tom Phillips. I mean, on NXT, I think him and Corey Graves are really good together. But that's where he needs to stay. There is no room for him on SmackDown. And even if they did get rid of David Otunga, which they should, he adds nothing to the broadcast. Even if they got rid of Otunga, Tom is a play-by-play guy. And they already have a play-by-play guy on that show. So instead, we have 4 announcers. It is completely unnecessary. But it's part of this super-size me mentality that they have about everything now. Like, with the network stuff, I could kind of understand that. Like, Survivor Series being 6 hours next Sunday, if you don't want to watch the 2-hour pre-show, you don't have to, even though the pay-per-view is still 4 hours. But okay, fine. They want to offer more content on the network, more live content. That's where it is, right? Okay, fine. Four announcers. You can't turn that off. You should have the option. That'd be kind of cool, actually. But you don't have that option. 3 hours of Raw, yeah, you cannot watch part of the show, I guess. You don't have to watch all 3 hours. But it depends on, you know, if you want to watch someone or see a certain match or if you're worried you're going to miss something. I mean, you know, 4 announcers is just... I just don't even know what the purpose is. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Already people, you know, a lot of people don't even think you need 3 announcers. But... okay, they've been doing 3 since the beginning of SmackDown Live, so okay, fine. But no, we gotta make it bigger and better, and you know, here's a company that clearly does not buy into the whole mentality of quality over quantity. They believe just the opposite. That's what they believe in. The big story coming out of this show is that Baron Corbin is off Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. He suffered a worked leg injury during a match against Kalisto. And in his place will be Shane McMahon. And when they were teasing at the end of the show, Daniel Bryan's out there with the list of Bryan, and he's teasing who might be the replacement for Corbin. I thought for a second there that they might go with my idea that I pitched on last week's show and put The Undertaker on the team, but then they went instead with the guy that The Undertaker beat at WrestleMania. And I was going to say, you know, poor Apollo Crews, because he's one of the guys I thought of initially. Like, okay, Crews is not on the show. You know, athletically, he's a freak of nature. They haven't really been doing anything with him. This might be a good spot for him. And I was thinking, okay, poor Apollo Crews, why not give the spot to him? But then I realized that Apollo Crews lost to Curt Hawkins on this show. He got rolled up and pinned by Curt Hawkins. Just like he was beaten by Baron Corbin. And not only beaten, but like the last time I think him and Corbin went one-on-one, it wasn't even competitive. It's like they are jobbing this guy out. And I just don't get it. It's not even competitive. So here he got rolled up and pinned by Curt Hawkins. I don't even know what to say to that. James Ellsworth, by the way, will serve as the team mascot for Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. what must someone like Samoa Joe or Bobby Roode think when they see James Ellsworth on TV every week? I wonder. I wonder about that. Becky Lynch beat Alexa Bliss with the disarmer in about 15 minutes to retain her SmackDown Women's Championship. Referee did not see Alexa's foot on the bottom rope before she tapped out, so I am sure we have not seen the last of this. One thing I noticed when Becky came out with the belt, when did they start using replica belts on TV instead of the real thing? Those belts, they look so stiff. They look like toys. I mean, is this like a new occurrence? I don't think I ever noticed it on Raw, but I noticed that right away. I'm like, man, like why are they using replica belts on TV? I don't get it. I mentioned earlier we learned that Kalisto will challenge Brian Kendrick for the Cruiserweight title at Survivor Series. If Kalisto wins, SmackDown not only gets the Cruiserweight title, but they get the entire Cruiserweight division. This is in exchange for them allowing Dolph Ziggler to defend the Intercontinental title against Sami Zayn at the pay-per-view. Hardly seems like a fair trade-off to me, but that's what it is. End of the show is when we found out that Shane will be on Team SmackDown. And to be fair, this got a huge reaction from the crowd in Glasgow. I mean, these people loved it. They went nuts. They did the yes chant. It felt like a big deal. So this week, it is the go-home week to Survivor Series. They are loading up both shows. Raw will have Lesnar and Goldberg there live in the ring for a face-off. They will have an appearance by Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan from SmackDown. They will be on Raw. And when Raw goes off the air, because 3 hours just is not enough, they're going to have a State of the WWE debate on the network with Shane and Daniel Bryan, Stephanie and Mick Foley. I guess we'll see how that goes. I already did my State of the WWE rant impromptu during the Raw review. And SmackDown will have the return of The Undertaker on the 900th episode. Edge will be there. He was a very big part of SmackDown. Edge carried SmackDown on his back for a couple of years there. He will host a Cutting Edge segment, I believe, with the members of Team SmackDown. And The Miz will challenge Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental title. So they're loading up the two shows this week, which they should. They should be doing that. They should be getting people excited and interested in this pay-per-view. And it'll be cool to see Edge. It'll be cool to see The Undertaker, what they do with him. If they set something up for him at WrestleMania, perhaps, or even the Rumble. You know, again, Shawn Michaels ain't coming back, but that doesn't mean you couldn't do an AJ Styles-Undertaker match at the Rumble at the Alamo Dome. So I'm just saying, if they want to plant the seed and set something up, I think that'd be a pretty big match if they wanted to go down that road.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Steve Corino, who does the announcing with Kevin Kelly on Ring of Honor TV, he was invited down to the Performance Center to train this past week to do some of the training. They have a video up on YouTube right now with him talking about what a big deal it was for him to be able to do something with WWE. Carino's been in the business for over 20 years. He's obviously a very experienced, knowledgeable guy. It's very cool. You could see how happy he was in that video. And it got me thinking, you know, with Corey Graves getting spread so thin right now between NXT, Raw, now he's going to be doing the announcing with Mauro Ranallo on the new Cruiserweight show on Tuesday nights. When the time comes that they do take him off of NXT, and I suspect that might be coming sooner rather than later, I would love to see Corino take his place as the color commentary guy on there. I think he'd be a great fit. NXT was back at the Palladium in Los Angeles this week for the final two semifinal round matches in the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. The Authors of Pain beat Team DIY, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, when Paul Ellering distracted the referee, which allowed the Revival to show up. I don't know if they were under the ring or where they came from, but they attacked Gargano outside the ring. That left Ciampa on the inside to die. Akam and Rezar, I believe are their names, they laid waste to Ciampa with the Last Chapter, which is the Russian leg sweep clothesline combo. Authors of Pain get the win. I like the Authors of Pain. They did a move early in the match. It was really cool. where Gargano did a dive out to the floor. They, both of them were out there, and they caught him. So Ciampa sees this. He's like, all right, I'm going to do a dive. I'm going to knock them all down. So he hits the ropes to go do a dive out to the floor. But what the Authors of Pain did is they threw Gargano right into Ciampa's head as he was coming through the ropes. It's like, that was pretty cool. So this sets up a 2 out of 3 falls match, we would find out later, for the NXT Tag Team titles at TakeOver next weekend between DIY and The Revival. They're going to do it one more time. It also kind of gave away the result of the next semifinal round match between TM61 and Sanity, because there were, you knew there was no way they were going to do heel versus heel in the finals of this tournament. And, you know, have Sanity against the Authors of Pain. That just wasn't going to happen. And indeed, TM61 handed Sanity their first loss. So it will be TM61 against the Authors of Pain next weekend in the finals of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. Paul Ellering will be suspended above the ring in a shark cage, just like he was for the last Battle of Atlanta 30 years ago, which you can watch right now on the network. Back to Full Sail. They were kind of going back and forth between tape footage from the Palladium and then Full Sail, which is cool. I like that. Back to Full Sail, we had Ember Moon beating Rachel Evers. Speaking of Paul Ellering, Rachel Evers is the former Rachel Ellering, his daughter. I believe she took the Evers name as a tribute to her trainer, Lance Evers, who you may know as Lance Storm. And the show ended with a contract signing between Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura for their championship match at TakeOver Toronto. They had Nakamura in the ring surrounded by a bunch of security guards. Joe came out. He set a table up. This was unique. He set his own table up on the stage. So he wanted to keep his distance from Nakamura, and Joe was such an asshole here. You know, I love the way that Joe just completely disrespects Regal, and Regal just takes it. He tells Regal, Regal, I want you to bring me the contract. You're going to walk that contract up to me, and I'll sign it here. And Regal is awesome, like, you know, with his facial expressions and how disgusted he is. And he takes the contract, and he walks it up to Joe, and Joe signs it, and Nakamura goes to sign the contract and does, and then he starts beating up security guards left and right. He's laying waste to everybody in the ring. I think Joe tried to, or he teased that he was going to come down, but he stayed put on the stage while Nakamura beat the hell out of everybody in the ring until they were all gone. And that was the final, I don't know that that was the final bill. We got one more show. There's one more NXT show this Wednesday before TakeOver. But I'm looking forward to that match. I think that should be a hard-hitting match between Samoa Joe and Nakamura. And, you know, Joe's been down there for so long, and I suspect they're not taking the title off Nakamura. And so you assume that Nakamura wins. And it begs the question, what do you do with Joe? I think Joe has done all he can do in NXT. I think he deserves a shot on the main roster. God knows the main roster could use him on either brand. Probably Raw, but I almost don't even want him to go to Raw. And, you know, they're going to be in Toronto. They've got a big pay-per-view the next night. If Joe loses on Saturday, who's to say he can't show up on Sunday? I don't know what he would do. I saw Jim Ross pitch a pretty innovative idea in his blog about having Joe interfere. I think that was the idea, about having Joe interfere in the Brock Goldberg match and setting something up maybe with Lesnar and Joe for WrestleMania. And I've heard a lot of people talk about that, and I wouldn't mind seeing that. I think Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe would be a hell of a match, and it goes to what I was saying before about adding realism to it and cutting promos in those video packages, and I think Joe would be awesome in that role. But you can go any number of different ways with Joe. You can have Joe out there to attack, you know, the Seth Rollins or something, you know, for Team Raw, kind of throw a monkey wrench into that thing, and maybe at some point we find out that Triple H, who can't be bothered to show up on TV, Joe being one of his key guys on NXT, maybe we find out that he ends up on Raw as the hired gun of Triple H. You know, if they don't want to do a Triple H Rollins match for a while, then maybe you do something with Rollins and Joe for a while. And that's an idea that I pitched a long, long time ago. I think I might have pitched it last year when I was doing my predictions for 2017. Or for 2016, I should say. And I think actually that might have been one of the ideas for this year that I pitched for the Rumble, where Joe would debut in the Rumble or something like that. And he would be like a hired assassin for Triple H because he's one of Triple H's NXT guys. And he can go to WrestleMania. And yeah, I mean, I would love to see Joe called up to the main roster ASAP because there's nothing left for him to do in NXT, and I think he deserves a shot. And I suspect he's not winning, you know, next weekend. Speaking of which, we may as well just get into it now then. Predictions for NXT TakeOver Toronto at the Air Canada Centre, which is next Saturday night. The night before Survivor Series, we've got Ty Dillinger and Bobby Roode. I expect this to open the show. I know if it were me, I would open the show with this match. Two Canadian boys. You know the crowd's going to go nuts for both of them. I think Bobby Roode's entrance will be quite spectacular on this show with this crowd. And I suspect that he is winning. He should win. I mean, Bobby Roode should not lose this early to Ty Dillinger. All due respect to Ty. So Roode is my pick to win here. The Revival against Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. Best 2 out of 3 falls for the NXT Tag Team titles. You know, I've gone back and forth on whether they're turning these guys, you know, against each other and Champ is just going to snap on Gargano. I thought originally that they would go to the finals of the Dusty Classic and lose, and that would be where Champ had turned on Gargano, but they didn't go in that direction. I feel like at this point they've been, you know, they've lost, I can't say screwed, but they've lost so many times in these matches to the Revival. I think now is the time to pull the trigger and do a title change, and I would say that Gargano and Champ will win, 2 falls to 1. They become the new tag team champions. Asuka defends her NXT women's title against Mickie James. Asuka is my pick. I would not be shocked to see Ember Moon make the save for Mickie if Asuka, you know, beats her up after the match or something. TM61 against the Authors of Pain with Paul Ellering above the ring in a shark cage in the finals of the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. I think the Authors of Pain will pull it out. I think they stay undefeated and they win the cup. And Samoa Joe against Shinsuke Nakamura for the NXT Championship. I'm going with Shinsuke. I don't see the title going back to Joe. I think Joe's time is about ready to wrap up. I don't know if he'll debut at Survivor Series. I don't know if they'll save him as a surprise for the Rumble match. But in the next couple of months, it's time. It is time for Joe to get the call. And Nakamura, I believe they're going to keep him around down there a little bit longer. They're, you know what? Fine. They need that big draw, that big star to carry NXT. I get that. After this show, there's no need to have Joe and Nakamura down there. You got to call one of them up. And if it ain't going to be Nakamura, it's going to be Joe. And so I suspect that will happen sooner rather than later. So that is the card. That's it's a hell of a card. I'll tell you something right now. I mean, they're doing their best to stack the Survivor Series. I don't want to say I'm not looking forward to the show. I can't say I'm overly excited about any of the matches other than Goldberg and Lesnar, the way they hyped it up last Monday night. But this card here for the TakeOver show, I'm probably looking forward more to this than I am Survivor Series. That's usually the way it works. I mean, when they pair these shows off with like the Rumble and WrestleMania and stuff, I usually look at the lineup and I'm like, man, I'm looking more forward to TakeOver than I am anything else. And very rarely, if ever, have they really had any misfires with these TakeOvers. I mean, some of the TakeOvers are better than others. Some are good, some are excellent. I've never seen a bad TakeOver show, and I suspect that that will not happen this weekend either. Pro Wrestling Magic's final hours, the road to Kingdom Come, is less than a week away. This Saturday, November 19, New Milford High School in New Milford, New Jersey, 4 p.m. start time. A portion of the proceeds go to the Children's Cancer Institute for Pediatric Cancer Research. Buy a ticket at prowrestlingmagic.ticketleap.com and use the promo code SOLOMONSTER to save $3 off your purchase. prowrestlingmagic.ticketleap.com for the show coming up next Saturday. That'd be a big wrestling day, right? You got a 4 p.m. Pro Wrestling Magic show. You got TakeOver that night. And then Survivor Series the next day. A lot of wrestling coming up next weekend. Thank God we don't have a lot of TNA to cover this week. Billy Corgan reached a settlement with Anthem Sports and TNA. Billy went on Twitter. He had this to say. He said, just signed my settlement with TNA/Anthem. I'll do a few interviews next week to spell out what is and is not in it. But once again, I appreciate those who have covered the story with balance. The true story on TNA involves a lot of men and women I respect and appreciate, both roster and crew, and they deserve the best. Meanwhile, Dixie Carter held a conference call with talent to brief them on what was going on. I don't know why anybody would trust anything out of this woman's mouth. When she was asked about changes to the creative team, she acknowledged that Dave Lagana had quit the week before, and Billy Corgan was no longer with the company. She said, for now, the team consists of John Gaborik, Matt Conway, who's been there for a long time, and Madison Rain. And that's it. That's all the TNA news for this week. That's the shortest TNA segment in about a month, and it feels so good. Lucha Underground. Famous B and Masquerita Sagrada, Believer's Backlash match. This was not the strap match like the first one was last season or the season before. Here, the fans were given weapons that they could give to the wrestlers to use in the match. This is pretty wild. You know, Masquerita at one point rolled a bowling ball into Famous B's balls. Famous B at another point found a toolbox and pulled out Rick Martel's old Arrogance atomizer. Even had the word Arrogance on the side of it. Dr. Wagner Jr. got involved, so Son of Havoc came out to even up the odds. The lovely Brenda took a pie to the face outside the ring, to which Matt Stryker told us, cream pie for the beautiful Brenda. See, now had Joey Styles told that joke, he would have been shit-canned, but that's a different story. Masquerita won with a flying DDT. Just a crazy fun brawl. You know, I enjoyed this for what it was. The Mac, Marty the Moth, Mary Poza, Ivelisse, and Jeremiah Crane, a.k.a. Sammy Callahan, against Killshot, Dante Fox, Argenis Tejano, and they call him Cage. In a match where the winning team would qualify for Aztec Warfare next week, Killshot and Dante, who had seemingly mended fences before the match, if you remember when Dante debuted his first night, he beat up Killshot. And seemingly they had made up, or so we thought. That kind of fell apart here in this match. Ivelisse hurt her ankle. There was an exchange with Killshot where he kind of like propelled her up into the air. And on the way down, she turned it into a Rana. It looked really cool, but she landed awkwardly on her ankle. And I think it was the same ankle she had broken a couple of seasons earlier. She clearly was in a lot of pain. She rolled out of the ring. And as she did, she was actually screaming, not again, not again. Now I checked and she posted a tweet back in March, I think during the filming of this season, saying two fractures, one torn ligament. So I'm going to assume that that was in reference to the injury here. I feel bad for her. It's a terrible injury to come back from, but I'm sure she'll come back from it. Dante, meanwhile, turned on Killshot. Like I said, he handed Marty the Moth the win, and basically Dante cost his team a spot in Aztec Warfare. And so it will be Marty, Mariposa, the Mac, Jeremiah, and whoever they're going to have to find to replace Ivelisse, they will get spots in the match next week. Main event was Prince Puma and Mil Muertes, Grave Consequences. Great main event. I think I've been spoiled by that first match with Mil Muertes and Phoenix. I don't know that there can ever be another Grave Consequences match that tops that one, but this one was great. And the Hot Tub Guy was there. They got this comical reaction shot from him at one point. That was awesome. So shout out to Sean Scoville. Puma lost. Instead of me recapping all the craziness and insanity in this match, I'll just tell you that Puma lost. Muertes put him in the same casket that he had used on Conan in Season 1. Conan, who I guess was killed. He was killed off in Season 1. A flatliner on the floor finishes off Puma. He gets stuffed into the casket, and one has to wonder if that might be the last we see of him in Lucha Underground, and if that means that he is headed to other places. I think he might actually be headed to New Japan and not NXT, but if that was his send-off, he went down fighting. It was a hell of a match. I can think of worse ways to be written out of a show, so this was good stuff. And that was a show. Very little Dario Cueto. There was, I think, one backstage segment or like a vignette of him and Matanza locked away in his cage. And that was it. So this was a very light on Dario show, which I tend to like the shows that have a lot of Dario because Dario's freaking awesome. But it's okay to get a little bit of a breather every now and then. It's time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We will start out with Steven from Virginia. What do you think about Shelton Benjamin coming back to WWE in the Royal Rumble match? Would it line up with the time needed to recover from his injury? And if so, do you think he would have a chance of winning it? I think it's possible. You know, rotator cuff tears are usually about 4 to 6 months, I think I remember reading, as far as a recovery. So if he heals up at the lower end of that, he had the surgery in September, he'd have a shot. He'd have a shot to make it for the Rumble. As far as winning it, no chance. No chance at all. Michael from Texas, I was at work talking to some of my coworkers about Roman Reigns, the Roman Reigns experiment. It dawned on me that Roman is the X-Pac of the Shield. Just like X-Pac, Roman was part of a successful faction. When the Shield broke up, Roman kept the attire, the attitude, the entrance of the Shield, just like X-Pac did when DX broke up. Both are okay workers and both have major go-away heat with the audience. What do you think? I think it's unfair to call X-Pac just an okay wrestler or an okay worker, you call them. I mean, that's... The dude could go. Like, he's better than that. I think you got to give him more credit than that. And also, to give him credit, Roman Reigns has had plenty of excellent matches on top. I know the people that don't like Roman Reigns are not going to want to hear that, but it's true. Just because you don't want to hear it doesn't make it true. He's had a lot of great matches. I don't think there was an X-Pac in the Shield. I think it's an unfair comparison. I think all three of those guys, they've been headliners for the company. They've all been world champion. X-Pac was neither of those things. He never headlined. He was never a world champion. He was never the guy or in the conversation about being the guy. When they gave him his own faction, in fact, it failed. And I'm sure that Uncle Cracker music didn't help, but it didn't get over. It didn't work. I do think there's something to the dislike of Roman Reigns, a small part of it anyway, being that he looks like he never left the Shield, right? Rollins and Ambrose have kind of changed their look. They went on, they changed things up a little bit, did their own thing. But the look and the gear and the music, it's all, for Roman, it's all the same. Never really changed. I mean, now he's got gold trim or, you know, his vest is red and the music is slightly different. But, more or less, it's all the same. It's the same look. It's the same sound. He never evolved. And I think that did hurt him. You know, even X-Pac changed his look. He changed from the long tights to trunks when he joined the NWO back in 2002. So even X-Pac changed. But Roman, if you think about it and you look at him, he never really changed. Mario from Manchester, England. I was curious about Kurt Angle signing with WWE. I remember hearing about the infamous crucifixion angle in ECW in 1996, and that Angle was in attendance and was disgusted by what he saw. A couple of years later, he made his debut in WWE, but why was Kurt at ECW? Was he looking to sign with them before WWE? No, he was invited to the show by Shane Douglas. This was not long after he won the gold medal, so this probably was in 96. The only thing he asked of them, because Douglas has talked about this, and I think Raven did in it was Forever Hardcore. I mean, they talked about this in one of those documentaries. The only thing that Angle asked them was, I don't want to be involved in anything that might harm my character. Right? Because he was just coming off winning a gold medal in the Olympics. He didn't want to be involved in anything racy or controversial or, you know, anything that could be detrimental to his character. I know he did some commentary with Joey Styles that night, and then they did the crucifixion angle with Raven and the Sandman, which he did not know about, and when he saw it, he freaked the hell out. I think he threatened to sue them if they aired anything with him on their TV. And I don't even know if it was on TV or if this was being taped for like video or DVD, but it was being filmed, and he did not want to have any part of it after that. Now, would he have signed with ECW? I mean, who's to say? That's not really why he was there. He was not there with the expectation that he would sign, although I'm sure Paul Heyman would have wanted him to. He would have loved it. Heyman, you know, sent Raven out there after the crucifixion angle to apologize to the crowd, which I'm sure went over really well with those ECW fans. Evidently, it did not work on Kurt because he ended up in WWE. Hussein from Maldives, right? Yeah, I think that might be my first question from that country. If you were to put Paul Heyman somewhere off air in WWE, like booker or commentator, where would you place him? Oh my God, are you kidding me? Give him the book. Give that man the book. Or let him write. Make him the head writer. Let him write the whole show. Have you seen some of these shows lately? Do you really think it would be any worse with Paul Heyman writing the shows? I mean, come on. I would much rather see him in that spot. I mean, I love Paul Heyman to death as an on-air character. I really do. But I feel like, you know, he's there so few appearances are left for him and Brock. We see them so seldomly. we could get a lot more out of him, I think, behind the scenes if they took his brain and they allowed him to have some sort of creative input into the product. I would much, much, much rather see him help out the show in that way than just make an on-air appearance once every 6 weeks. Isaac from London, Ontario. I remember WWE considering, or hearing about WWE considering bringing in New Jack and revealing him as the guy who stabbed John Cena during Cena's feud with Carlito in 2004. I was wondering what you know about the story and why you think WWE thought it would be a good idea to bring in someone with a history of violent acts like New Jack. I don't think they ever did. I doubt that whole story. It was probably something that New Jack started. He probably started the whole rumor himself. I don't buy it at all. I don't think he was ever coming in. Dave from Liverpool, UK. I'm currently watching old WCW Monday Nitros on the network from around 96, 97. And Roddy Piper has arrived and is showing major respect to Ric Flair, like they are old friends. Yet, I'm also warming up for Survivor Series by watching the pay-per-view from 1991, and they are team captains against each other. I also remember their feud and hatred for one another at the time. What happened between 91-92 and 96-97 to make them go from hated rivals to respected friends? Was there genuine real-life respect between them in 96-97? They were friends going back to the late 70s. Yeah, Piper and Flair were tight. They worked together back in like Mid-Atlantic. At that point, their friendship probably went back about 15, 20 years, but they were friends from very, very early on, and I'm sure they love working together in WWE. It's a shame they never were able to take that feud to a big TV match. I know they had a bunch of house show matches. They didn't really do much. They had one really great angle, which was kind of ahead of its time in 91, where Vince McMahon took a bump. It was Piper on commentary and Vince was, Flair came out for a match and he saw the announcers and he sauntered over and, you know, he was trying to antagonize Piper and slapping him in the back of the head. And Vince is like, don't do it. Don't do it. Let it slide. So, Flair took it too far. Piper picked up a chair, which was like a wooden chair. It wasn't even like a steel chair. And he broke the chair. He broke the wooden chair across Vince's back. Vince got caught in the crossfire. Big brawl, but it never led to anything. I mean, think about it. I mean, they may have been opposing captains at the Survivor Series, and they did have that one great sequence, that moment at the 1992 Royal Rumble where Flair cleared the ring and the countdown clock hits and the buzzer sounds and out comes Piper. It was this great moment. But you can't think of a single singles match they ever had on TV because I don't think it ever happened. And I think that was a missed opportunity to do something between the two of them. But yeah, when they went to WCW in 96-97, and I'm sure they talked about it in their promos, you know, how far back they went and all that. I mean, that's legit. That is legit. They were friends going back to the early days. And yeah. Genuine real-life friendship, genuine real-life respect between the two of them. Matt from Newfoundland, Canada. Buy or sell? Survivor Series 1996 or Survivor Series 2002? Both were held in Madison Square Garden and both were fantastic shows from top to bottom. I don't know that I'd go that far and say top to bottom. I think they are two of the more memorable Survivor Series shows. I would go in 96 myself. I wouldn't fault you if you said 2002. You had the first Elimination Chamber, which was a really good match. Brock and Big Show, which was a very short match, but I still remember Brock throwing Big Show around. I remember when he picked Big Show up on his shoulders. And now it's sad in a way, because now the way Cena picks everybody up and Cena puts Big Show on his shoulders like it's nothing. But in 2002, at that pay-per-view, when Brock picked up Big Show on his shoulders for the F5, I mean, I'm watching that thinking, this is a highlight reel moment, like all-time highlight reel moment. They got to put this into the signature at the beginning of the show. This was like one of the most unreal feats of strength I had ever seen in a wrestling match. And the place went nuts for it, because we hadn't seen Big Show get picked up and thrown around the ring. I mean, he gave Big Show a belly-to-belly suplex across the ring in that match. That's how freakishly strong this guy was. And it was fun to watch that match, but it was so brief. I know Scott Steiner debuted on that show, and he wanted the effing mic. 2 seconds into his debut, he's already dropping F-bombs on the air. That was memorable. But I don't really think, I'm trying to think back to the other matches on that show. I think there might have been a reunion in one of the matches between the Dudley Boys. This was after they had split them up. I think there was, I remember there being a really good match. I think it was Edge and Rey Mysterio, Los Guerreros, Angle and Benoit. There might have been a fourth team. I don't remember. So yeah, I mean, that was a really good show. 96, though, the one I'm going with, I'm buying on 96. 96 had two excellent singles matches. I mean, they had some Survivor Series matches that weren't particularly memorable for anything big happening. I mean, I remember being disappointed when they had the Mystery Man in one of the matches. And I mean, for weeks, I mean, the rumors like on the internet were, oh, it's going to be Rick Rude. Rick Rude's coming. And Rick Rude did come back eventually. But we thought it was going to be, you know, Ravishing Rick Rude, or it was going to be someone big, Ultimate Warrior. And it turned out to be Superfly Jimmy Snuka. That was a massive disappointment. But Bret Hart and Steve Austin had an excellent match. Shawn Michaels and Sid, that had to be the best match of Sid's career. And the crowd was for Sid. They were against Shawn. I mean, here's an early example of the crowd going against the grain. They hated Shawn Michaels. And when Sid won the match, now think of what Sid did in that match, okay? Sid, who had been a babyface, and he was friends with Shawn Michaels, Sid took a camera from one of the cameramen at ringside, those giant heavy cameras, and he slammed it into the chest of Jose Lothario, who was Shawn's boyhood mentor and trainer. At that point, he had to be 60-something, maybe 70-something years old. He hits this old man with a camera. He's on the ground writhing around like he's having a heart attack. Shawn's out there trying to help him. And Sid goes out there, picks the camera back up, hits Shawn in the back with it, says fuck you a couple of times, which were very audible, by the way. I don't know if they edited it off the network or not, but very audibly Sid yells F you twice, picks him up, throws him in the ring, power bombs him and pins him, and the place goes nuts. They're so happy to see this guy not only maybe kill this old man, but also beat Shawn Michaels for his championship. That was a big moment. That was a big moment. So I have a fondness for that show looking back. Me personally, I would go at 96 and I would sell on 02. But like you said, I mean, both very good shows in their own way. And lastly here, Dean has a buy or sell. It's fair to say the current WWE product has become a little stale. Just a little. And I'm not saying there is one quick fix. However, I am a big comic book fan and have long believed that no hero is complete without their villain. Batman and the Joker, Superman and Lex Luthor. So as a hypothetical shot in the arm to reinvigorate current storylines, buy or sell, one great heel or one great babyface? Now, I pulled this question because I thought it was just interesting, and it made me think. I like questions like that. I would say, like, if I'm running my own wrestling company and I need one great heel or one great babyface, I'm inclined to say one great babyface in the mold of like what Steve Austin was in the late 90s, because I know if you've got that one big babyface that just catches fire, people will want to buy tickets to see them. People will want to buy their shirts. They'll want to buy all their merch. One great hot babyface can carry your company. Now, it's only going to carry the company for so long. You're going to have that those one or two big heels. Austin got hot. How long would he have stayed hot for if Vince McMahon wasn't such a great villain? I don't know. He might have fizzled out after a few months. But they had Austin, right? And they had Austin, and he got hot, and he helped carry them to the promised land. So I think a hot enough babyface, I would want that over a heel. But, you know, I could see the other side of it in that, if you got one great heel, whether it's Vince, whether it's whoever, pick your guy. Really, really, really great villain. Maybe Ric Flair back in the late 80s before he went babyface. That's tremendous. And that you need that because that one great heel can work with three or four different babyfaces. So Flair could work with Luger. Flair could work with Steamboat. Flair could work with Sting. Flair could work with Dusty. What's the common denominator in there? Ric Flair. If you got a guy that's that good, he can work with three or four guys and he can make them Flair made Sting. You can make a hot babyface with one really big heel, but I wouldn't want to start out with a heel and no babyfaces, right? Because that's not good. So I'd rather have that one big hero that has the people, and then from there, hopefully, you know, I'd be able to create a heel who can then work with three or four other guys and make three or four other hot babyfaces. So I'll probably buy on the babyface, but honestly, I mean, it's almost like a trick question because you do kind of need one with the other. So that's my take on that. I'd be curious to hear what you guys think, because I do think it's an interesting question. You know, if let's say you already had a wrestling company stocked with a bunch of guys and you had some babyfaces, you had some heels, what would you really rather have? Would you really have that one hot heel, or would you rather have that one unbelievably mega over babyface? I'm just thinking of it in terms of dollars and cents, in terms of selling shit. You know what I mean? Like, I would want to have a Steve Austin or a Rock in 2000 who's just so over. Like, they can do no wrong, and people will just buy tickets the minute they go on sale. They'll buy up all your inventory as far as all the t-shirts and stuff. Like, to me, that's still what you want. But having a good heel is just, you can't undersell how important it is to have someone like that. And I'm thinking about WWE now, and do we really have that one hot baby face and that one hot heel? The answer is no. We really don't. AJ Styles is fantastic, but is he really like a great top heel who's gonna, you know, make three or four or five different guys? Probably not. Kevin Owens? No, not really. Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Dean Ambrose? Nope. They don't really have anybody like that, in my opinion. Maybe you disagree. So that's the mailbag. We have a lot of other questions I have yet to go through. I am working my way through them. If you have a question you want to send in, keep sending them on in. TheSolemnMonster@gmail.com. It's always open. Again, please include your name and where you are from when you do write in. Follow me on Twitter @SolemnMonster as we approach 20,000 followers on there. You can vote in the polls that go up every Monday night after Raw. Thumbs up, thumbs down. We'll have one up for Survivor Series next weekend as well. Keep subscribing to our YouTube channel. I am anticipating a Sound Off Extra review next weekend after Survivor Series, so you will want to subscribe to the channel to be notified of when that goes up. Thank you to everybody who continues to donate by PayPal using our Audible link, which helps us out when you do that, and you sign up using the link, buying a t-shirt and tweeting me photos of you wearing the t-shirts. I love all that stuff. So keep supporting the show. Please leave us some love in iTunes and Stitcher. If you've got 2 seconds, if you want to give us a star rating and leave a review, that would also be very helpful. And we will be back with episode 470 next weekend. I am expecting to do it normal time on Sunday, which means I guess we'll have our NXT TakeOver review on that show and a preview with predictions for Survivor Series. Big weekend coming up. That'll be on 470. So until then, be well, stay safe, and have yourselves a great week. We will see you right back here again for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemnmonster sounds off.
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Solemnmonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solemnmonster sounds off. Available at thesolemnmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemnmonster sound off.